Hello, this is Nikki Ambrose with the Tri-County Journal for Moultrie, Douglas, and Coles Counties, the issue for Wednesday, August 5th. The first article, Jamie Albert honored with DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses. Jamie Albert, RN, was honored with the DAISY Award for Extraordinary Nurses at Sarah Bush Lincoln on July 23rd. Albert was nominated for making a big impression on a patient who was anxious about receiving care during the COVID-19 pandemic. The patient shared the following story. I received exceptional care from all of the nursing staff, but Jamie really impressed me with her critical thinking skills and her duty as a nurse to advocate for me, her patient. My admission was during the COVID pandemic, and after 3 days on 4 medical, the providers felt that I needed to be tested for COVID. For me, this was very scary. I was worried about all of the people I had been in contact with, my family, my coworkers, and the staff. What if I tested positive? Did I expose someone to this horrible virus? The guilt I began to feel was overwhelming. It was a very scary time for me. It was during this time that Jamie stayed by my side and advocated for me. SBL had just been approved to complete the rapid COVID testing in the lab. Jamie asked the provider if this was something that could be completed on me. The results of this test took about an hour instead of the usual 24 hours with the regular testing. The provider agreed, and Jamie continued to provide my care as I was her only patient until the results came back. This meant so much to me as her patient. During these uncertain times with an unknown virus, Jamie could have been scared, but instead she put my needs before her own and did what was best for her patient. Thank you, Jamie, for your excellent nursing care. Sarah Bush Lincoln has joined more than 2,700 healthcare facilities by becoming a DAISY Award hospital partner. During the award presentation, Albert received a certificate, a DAISY Award pin, and a unique hand-carved serpentine stone sculpture from Zimbabwe entitled A Healer's Touch. The DAISY Award was established in memory of J. Patrick Barnes, who died at 33 of complications of idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, ITP, a little known but not uncommon autoimmune disease. DAISY is an acronym for diseases attacking the immune system. The care Patrick and his family received from nurses while he was ill inspired this unique means of thanking nurses for making a profound difference in the lives of their patients and families. Patients, visitors, nurses, physicians, and other employees may nominate a deserving nurse for the DAISY Award, and a nurse will be selected by SBL's DAISY Committee every month to receive this special honor. Nomination forms are located at www.sarahbush.org and at all SBL clinics and on patient floors. The forms can be submitted to any Sarah Bush Lincoln staff member or sent via email to daisy@sblhs.org or mail to Sarah Bush Lincoln, DAISY Nursing Award, 1000 Health Center Drive, Mattoon, Illinois, 61938. For more information, SBL DAISY Coordinator Tracy McCord, RN, at 217-238-4987 or tmccord@sblhs.org. Next article, new youth sports guidelines drastically limit allowable competition. Subheading, football, competitive cheer, wrestling effectively, limited to no contact practice. By Jerry Norwicki, Capital News, Illinois. The state on Wednesday released new guidelines for youth and recreational sports that will drastically limit allowable activities based on the risk of spreading the novel coronavirus. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the new guidelines at a COVID-19-related news conference in Chicago Wednesday, calling it a situation where the toughest choice is also the safest one. The guidelines, which classify sports in three tiers of risk based on the likelihood that participation in the sport increases coronavirus transmission, pertain to school-based sports, travel clubs, private and recreational leagues, and park district sports programs. The new guidelines, which are set to take effect August 15th, do not apply to adults playing tennis and golf, both of which are activities already regulated under guidance issued by the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity in June. Parentheses, Major League Baseball, close parentheses, is facing down a major outbreak just days into its abbreviated fan-free season, Pritzker said, referencing the outbreak that canceled the week's games for the Miami Marlins. The virus is unrelenting, and it spreads so easily that no amount of restriction seems to keep it off the playing field or out of the locker room. For medium and higher risk sports, as classified by the state, the competitive season is effectively canceled. High risk sports include boxing, competitive cheer and dance, football, hockey, lacrosse, martial arts, rugby, ultimate frisbee, and wrestling. Those sports will be allowed to continue on the first of four specified levels of activity, which is restricted to no contact practices and trainings. That means no competition at any level. The Illinois High School Association, which oversees most interschool athletics in Illinois, announced later Wednesday that football, girls volleyball, and boys soccer will be moved to spring 2021. They submitted the modified season plan to the Illinois Department of Public Health for approval. Golf, girls tennis, cross country and swimming and diving will occur in the fall season, which will run from August 10th to October 24th. Per the IHSA schedule, the winter sports season will run from November 16th to February 13th, spring sports will run from February 15th to May 1st, and summer sports will run from May 3rd to June 26th. Meanwhile, per the governor's plan, medium-risk activities include basketball and wheelchair basketball, fencing, flag football and 7-on-7 football, paintball, racquetball, soccer, volleyball, and water polo. Participants in those sports will be allowed to compete at level 2, which includes scrimmage against teammates with parental consent for minors, but also does not allow for outside competition. Low-risk sports will be allowed to compete in intra-league, intra-conference matches, or matches within their emergency medical system regions. State or league championship games or meets would be allowed only for low-risk sports. Baseball and softball are included in this category, provided players and coaches remain at least 6 feet apart in dugout areas, or players are seated 6 feet apart in bleachers behind the dugout. If those conditions aren't met, the sports enter the medium-risk category and are not allowed to compete with others. Bass fishing, sailing, canoeing, and kayaking are low risk too, if the number of people on a boat is limited enough to allow for social distancing. If not, they are medium or higher risk. Singles ice skating is low risk, but any more than that is high risk. Cross country and cycling are low risk, provided the number of competitors are reduced and workspace guidelines are followed. Gymnastics, ropes courses, and weightlifting are low risk if the equipment is cleaned between each use, but medium risk if not. Track and field is low risk, but runners must use every other track and equipment must be frequently cleaned or it's in the medium category as well. Swimming and diving is low risk if restricted to a single lane and singles diving. Relays, synchronized swimming, and paired diving are medium risk. Badminton, archery, bowling, climbing, crew, scholastic golf, disc golf, horseback riding, skateboarding, and tennis are all deemed low risk by the state without any qualifiers. Sideline spirit sports are considered low risk if participants remain 6 feet apart and there are no stunts and lifts. Otherwise, they are high risk. This virus remains dangerous to kids and parents and grandparents and teachers and coaches, and for right now, this is the best thing that we can do for the health and safety of our families under the current circumstances, Pritzker said. The announcement came as IDPH reported another 1,393 confirmed cases of the virus among 38,187 tests completed in the previous 24 hours. That accounted for a one-day positivity rate of 3.6%, which kept the rolling seven-day rate for the state at 3.8%. At the end of Wednesday, there were 1,491 COVID-19 patients in Illinois hospitals, including 355 in intensive care unit beds and 152 on ventilators, all of which represented increases from the previous day. Not only have we started to see an increase in the cases over the past several weeks, but we're also seeing a slight increase in hospital admissions as well, IDPH Dr. Ngozi Ezike said at the news conference. These are clearly indicators that we are headed in the wrong direction. She again urged Illinoisans to wear face coverings, remain 6 feet apart from others, and wash hands frequently. That's what we can all do. That's what we can all do to protect ourselves, our families, our friends, our community, our state, she said. Pritzker said the guidelines should not be extrapolated as a comment on how education will be treated when school starts in the fall. I think each school is trying to set plans for their school, he said. I've said all along that the Illinois State Board of Education has been putting out guidance to make sure that there are some basic requirements, like masking, in schools that are adhered to. But because each school is so much different, there are different campuses, there are differently configured buildings, different numbers of people in a building per square foot. We really want those schools to make decisions for themselves. But there's no doubt about it, I'm watching very closely. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Next, we have the obituaries. Michael Wayne Edwards. Michael Wayne Edwards, infant son of Clayton Wayne Edwards and Alexis Marie Stokes, was stillborn at 2:31 a.m. on Saturday, July 4, 2020, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospital. Private family services will be at a later date. John E. Spencer. John E. Spencer, 69, of Pueblo West, Colorado, passed away on June 13th. Graveside service with military honors was held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 4th at Cartwright Cemetery, rural Tuscola. Liam V. Wilgus. Liam Valentine Wilgus, infant son of Dustin and Heidi Wilgus, was stillborn on Wednesday, July 15th at Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospital in Mattoon, Illinois. Private services were held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, July 18th at the Drew and Heather Miller residence. Reverend Mike Carr officiated. Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Robert E. Williams. Robert Eugene Bob Williams, age 71, passed away July 10th from pancreatic cancer at the Clayburgh Nursing Home in Cuba, Illinois. There will be a private graveside service for Bob at the Headyville Cemetery in Jasper County. Adam M. Holder. Adam Michael Holder, 30, of Centralia, Illinois, formerly of Charleston, Illinois, passed away 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, July 21st at Bryan Manor in Centralia, Illinois. A private memorial service was held on Saturday, July 25th at the Edwards Funeral Home. Burial will be at a later date at the Zion Hill Cemetery in Ducktown, Tennessee. Deborah A. Jarchow. Deborah Ann Jarchow Olson, 60, of Charleston, Illinois, passed away at 10:18 a.m. on Sunday, July 12th. A memorial service was held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, July 25th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main, Arcola. Tony O'Brien officiated. Burial of her ashes will be at a later date in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Jacob W. Miller. Jacob W. Miller, 82 years, 4 days, of Arthur, Illinois, passed away at 2:20 a.m. on Monday, July 20th at his son's home in rural Arcola. Funeral services were held at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, July 22nd at the HCK West Building, 1 mile south of Arthur. Bishop David Otto officiated. Burial was in the Otto Cemetery. Visitation was held after 5 p.m. on Monday, July 20th, and any time after 10 a.m. on Tuesday, July 21st. Elvin D. Goad. Elvin D. Goad, 83, of Arcola, passed away at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, July 19th at Helia Healthcare in Olney, Illinois. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 24th at the Edwards Funeral Home. Reverend Rodney Hauser officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held 2 hours prior to the funeral. Max D. Warnes. Max D. Warnes, 84, of Tuscola, passed away at 11:09 a.m. Thursday, July 23rd at the OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. Graveside services were held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 28th at the Tuscola Township Cemetery, where Reverend Kenneth Roeder officiated. Jean E. Jones. Jean Ellen Kennedy Jones died July 10th. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorials in Jean's name be made to the School of Music, the University of Illinois Foundation, 1305 West Green Street, Urbana, Illinois. A celebration of life will be held in Tuscola at a place and time to be determined. Michael F. Lump. Michael F. Lump, 62, of Camargo, died at 9:06 a.m. on Saturday, July 18th at his home. A funeral service was held at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, July 22nd at the Joins Funeral Home, 1375 North Street, Route 130 in Villa Grove. Father Walder officiated. A visitation was held an hour prior to the service. Burial followed at the Centennial Cemetery in Villa Grove. Next article. Harvest Ridge Wind Farm is generating clean energy in Douglas County. EDP Renewables Wind Farm has significantly contributed to Illinois' economy and environment, Newman, Illinois, July 30th. EDP Renewables' 200-megawatt Harvest Ridge Wind Farm has finished construction and is now fully operational and producing clean electricity in Douglas County. Harvest Ridge and EDPR's other 6 operational Illinois wind farms cumulatively produce enough clean energy to power approximately 412,000 average Illinois homes each year. I've worked on 4 of EDPR's wind farms in Illinois and have seen the benefits we bring to the communities who host our projects, said Mike Duffy, who recently moved to Douglas County to work as the lead technician at the Harvest Ridge Wind Farm. Harvest Ridge will contribute more than $2 million in taxes each year to support local public services, including the Villa Grove School District where my kid attends. These are real dollars that make a real impact, and I'm proud to be a part of bringing this clean energy opportunity to the area. Harvest Ridge Wind Farm will provide numerous benefits to Douglas County and its local communities. Over the life of the project, Harvest Ridge will contribute up to 50 million dollars in taxes to support local public services such as schools, roads, fire districts, libraries, and others. The wind farm will also provide a stable form of income to local landowners who have leased land to EDPR to host the wind farm infrastructure. More than 250 people worked on the construction of the wind farm, and 10 full-time employees will continue to operate and maintain the turbines throughout the project's life. In addition to boosting the local economy, Harvest Ridge will positively contribute to the environment by saving more than 355 million gallons of water each year and displacing carbon emissions from fossil fuel power plants, which are a major contributor to climate change. Through long-term power purchase agreements, PPA, Wabash Valley Power Alliance, WVPA, Walmart, and a private off-taker purchase 50 MW and 50 MW respectively of the wind farms, I guess that's megawatts, of the wind farms capacity. The acquisition of this 100 megawatt share of the Harvest Ridge Wind Farm allows Wabash Valley Power Alliance to further enable the production and development of renewable energy, said WVPA's Executive Vice President of Risk and Resource, Lee Wilms. For many of us in the industry, alternative energy is no longer an alternative. EDPR has been an important partner to WVPA and our membership in diversifying our power supply while creating opportunities for companies to purchase green power. Walmart has a goal to be supplied by 100% renewable energy and sourcing energy from wind farms developed by partners like EDP Renewables is a core component in the mix, said Mark Vanderhelm, Vice President of Energy for Walmart. Wind energy is an important part of our energy portfolio, and Walmart plans to continue our efforts to pursue renewable energy projects that are right for our customers, our businesses, and the environment. Over the next several months, and while the wind farm produces clean energy, the construction efforts will continue and will be focused on road repairs and other land restoration work. Building the wind farm required dozens of subcontractors, including many local businesses. It's exciting to see the wind farm up and running, stated Brian Moody, the executive director of the Tuscola Chamber and Economic Development. These projects don't just happen every day. It was an impressive construction effort that has benefited our local trades, businesses, hotels, and restaurants. This economic activity was especially welcome given the negative impact that COVID-19 is raging on our economy. EDP Renewables is the largest owner and operator of wind farms in Illinois, with 1,201 megawatts of operating capacity. In addition to Harvest Ridge, EDPR's footprint includes the 205-megawatt Bright Stock Wind Farm in McLean County, the 100-megawatt Rail Splitter Wind Farm in Tazewell and Logan Counties, the 300-megawatt Top Crop Wind Farm in LaSalle and Grundy Counties, and the 398-megawatt Twin Groves Wind Farm in McLean County. Collectively, EDPR's 7 operational Illinois wind farms represent an estimated capital investment of approximately $2.3 billion and $1.5 billion spent in the state through the end of last year. Through 2019, the projects have also distributed $66.8 million to local governments and $75.8 million to local landowners. Next article, Douglas County Farm Bureau President's July Agriculture Update by Larry Dallas. We had corn tassels by July 4th. The heat in June moved the corn forward and it began to pollinate at what we think of as a normal time. By pollinating earlier, the corn stands a better chance of being dry this fall for harvest. Of course, the replant and very late planted fields are only shoulder high right now. None of our corn is even as we would like it to be. It has gotten tall enough to hide a lot of the ponds and replant areas and at least looks better from the road. The soybeans are a deep green color, but it seems to me they don't grow very fast. Looking at a field frequently doesn't seem to help. We are pleased with the weed control in most of our soybeans. Hopefully that will hold until harvest. Weed control right now in a soybean field is mostly limited to chopping with a hoe. We don't walk fields as we did in the past, but we still go cut an unsightly patch of weeds by hand. One of our weather sources says that we are 10 inches of rain ahead of the average for this time of year. That helps explain why this spring was so much fun. That didn't all fall during the growing season and isn't all stored in the soil either. Heat increases the water needs of the growing crop, and rain through the year is necessary for good yields. We are fortunate that our prairie soils will store a lot of water. The lighter soils of southern Illinois that developed under trees don't have the organic matter in them that our deep soil does. Drought is always closer down there. Heat during corn pollination is always a concern. The pollen from the tassel at the top of the plant has to get to the silks on the ear shoot lower on the plant. Cool weather with some breeze is ideal for pollen movement. Hot sun with low humidity can kill the pollen before it reaches the silk. We have had ample humidity and corn pollination should go well. The slaughter numbers of hogs and cattle are back near the pre-coronavirus levels. There hasn't been a lot of progress in working through the backlog of animals from the packing plant shutdowns in the spring, however. An industry spokesman I heard thought that might last into the fall. Grain prices, especially corn, have suffered during the era of COVID-19, but the disruptions to livestock producers have been huge. I have thought quite a bit about the changes we have seen this year and what the future looks like. People that get paid to think about that are looking too, I imagine. The just-in-time supply chain collapsed and we saw shortages of toilet paper and surgical masks. The food chain was severely disrupted. Will the consumer continue to prepare food at home or charge out to eat in restaurants like before the pandemic? All this has implications for agriculture. Food to be sold in the grocery store is packaged differently than food going to the restaurant trade. Should a company set up for one or the other, or maybe both in some manner? Economies of scale have led to giant packing plants that handle thousands of animals a day. Does the coronavirus make many local small locker plants a better choice? The grain markets linger at low prices. The weather is seen as benign over much of the corn belt, and planted acres are close to early guesses. Some western areas are showing dry soil, and Indiana had a lot drier than normal areas. The markets see that as more of a concern for soybeans, since they are just starting to bloom and put on pods. The corn is not made yet, however, and needs rain to finish. The University of Illinois economists have gone from predicting a small profit for the average Illinois farmer to predicting a loss, even figuring in government assistance. That is depressing, but there is always hope or we wouldn't stay at it. Thank you for reading about Douglas County agriculture this month. And last article, Horizon Health Podiatry Services expand and welcome Dr. Wojnicki. Beginning Monday, August 3rd, Dr. Brittany Wojnicki, surgical podiatrist, will begin seeing patients at Horizon Health's Paris Clinic. She will be joining the practice of Philip Holloway, DPM. To make an appointment with Dr. Wojnicki, call 217-465-8438. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading this week's issue of the Tri-County Journal. I enjoyed reading and look forward to reading with you again.